There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. I'm a grateful and fortunate alcoholic. My name's Jim White. And through the grace of God and the program and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found it necessary to take a drink since June 7, 1982. And for that, I am truly grateful. You know, good evening, Valley Group. This is a great day. You know, my bride told me before I left she should have gotten a haircut. You know, and I was like, they won't notice. You know, but for some reason she likes to dress me, she likes to trim my hair, she likes to trim my mustache, she likes to say things like, did you trim your nose here? You know, but that's life. I'd like to congratulate those folks who took chips and let you know that this is a great place to be. If there's anybody that's newer than me, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to a new way of life. Welcome home. You know, I am one for sure that's happy you're here. Hopefully you'll keep me sober just one more day. Gary, right on, man. I'll fit my girl's attention. Man, you got to be old to have that much time. Yeah, that's a good man. That's a good man. I guess the place I started is at the beginning. You know, I grew up in South Louisiana, and I was born and grew up in South Louisiana when being black wasn't a real popular thing. And, you know, before I get into telling you how great I am, you know, one thing I like to do is thank God that I'm in the upright position today. Because I'm here today in front of you, it's but and by and for the grace of God. I could not make it here on my own. You know, I know today that I didn't seek you out. I didn't run for help. That God was up there one day and he told Jesus, touch the little fat one, he won't make it. That's the only reason I'm here, you know. So if I say something tonight that offend anybody, and I may, I hope you have a counselor, a priest, a sponsor, or somebody you can talk to. Because this is my life, where I come from, to where I'm at today. And I'm real happy with where I'm at today. Really, really happy. I can see, you know. And as I was saying, I grew up in South Louisiana at a time when being black wasn't real popular. So I developed this thing where I did not like white people, you know. And one of the other things that I had a problem with was white people wasn't my favorite group. And the other thing was I just didn't like them, you know. I don't know why. I just don't like them. You know, if you look at my family tree, you'll discover that one side is white and one side is black. You know, my mom was white, my dad was black, or Creole. So basically, I'm a Cajun Creole. You know, and you mix that with alcohol and you've got one jerk, I tell you. But I somehow managed to get through school. And I graduated from high school. I was this really good kid growing up. I worked on a farm with my dad. I was kind of his shadow. Wherever he went, I was there doing whatever he was doing because I wanted to be a man. I wanted to be a real man like my dad. You know, someone who I've seen wrestle a steer to the ground with his bare hands. Yeah. You know, he's the guy that if you've seen him in a fight with the bear, help the bear. You know, that's the kind of man he was, and I wanted to be like him. See, my dad drinks a little, so I drink a little. You know. And I'm this really nice kid everybody liked. And one day, I'm going through life, and I got out of high school. As I said, I don't know how that happened, because I'm not really the smartest guy in the world. You know, I can read a little, and I write some. You know, but I managed to make it through high school. And I got this job working in the oil field. And people started not liking me, because I started doing things that upset them. You know. I started drinking, you know, and I don't like to say I had much of a social drinking period. It lasted about 30 minutes, you know, because the first time I can think back, you know, I don't remember when I took my first drink. I imagine it was somewhere when I was about this tall, shadowing my dad, but the first time I remember drinking, I got drunk. And some guy got all upset because I wanted to go to bed with his wife. Imagine that selfish fool. Yeah. But I didn't know that there was a problem. See? Because that's what everybody around me did. They drank. They got in fights. They got in automobile accidents. They got arrested. They got put in hospital. You know? But we got up and we went to work. So I didn't really have a problem because I'd get up and I'd go to work. You know, I could drink till 6 o'clock in the morning. That was great. I didn't have to get up. I was already up. I'd just go to work. See? And that's how I did things. But I got a job working in the oil fields offshore in the Gulf of Mexico for Shell Oil Company as a roustabout. And as a roustabout, they paid me a lot of money in 1974 for a 19-year-old kid. You know? So what I did was I got myself a fast car, because I like fast cars. Got myself some really nice clothes, because I like to dress really nice. Because that's what women like. Guys with fast cars, nice clothes, and a lot of money. You know? Not to mention the fact that I'm damn good looking. Okay. And I went out into the world with that attitude. You know, I'd work 7 days on and I'd party for seven. And I'd go back to the platform to work for 7 days and party for 7 days. You know, and I noticed things started happening around me, like, you know, girlfriends didn't last very long, you know. They were kind of selfish too, you know. You get drunk, kick on them, hit them in the mouth. They didn't want to talk to you anymore. You know, that kind of stuff. You give them a little ride in your car and they got all hyper because you went over 120 and you didn't know you was driving. You know, just didn't like them. Yeah. And in the meantime, things started happening to me. I started getting arrested because I was black. And I knew it was because I was black. I was in South Louisiana. You know. And I got arrested one night simply because I lost control of my car. I came up on what they call an engineering phenomenon in Louisiana. It was called a curve. And I couldn't negotiate it at the speed I was going, so I clipped three pine trees about this big and hit a telephone pole. You know? And this state trooper came out and gave me this roadside thing, you know, where you're supposed to touch your nose and tilt your head backwards, and I fell over backwards, and they brought me to this place they call jail. You know, because I was black. And charged me with operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. I didn't like them very much. But like I said, I had a good job, so I bailed myself out of jail. I went to court, they fined me $125 plus cost of court. Came out to $157. And the judge had paid a lady on the way out, so I paid her on the way out, and I was off to the races again. You know. And my life ran like that for the first 5 years I was out of high school. I'm not quite sure where I was headed, but one day I woke up and I looked outside and there was this patrol car out there. Deputy Sheriff was speaking to my mom. There was a fence that went around the house and he was at the little gate and he was standing there talking to her and he had some papers in his hand. And when he left, he didn't leave with her, so I knew he wasn't after her. So I started thinking it was time to leave. But one thing led to another, and I got arrested because I discharged the firearm in the direction of another human being, thereby causing great bodily harm to that individual. And it upset the judge somewhat, and he says, we have a place for people like you. He says, if you look to the back of the room, all the recruiters in the military were there. He says, you can go with one of them. And maybe you'll earn stripes for your uniform, or I'll give you one with stripes on it already. So I got up and I started to the back of the room, and the Navy recruiter stood up, and I said, can I go with her? You know? He said, if she'll have you. And she says, how long do I have him for? He says, he's not to come back to the States for 4 years. I can do that standing on my head. So I joined the United States Navy, became a respectable American serviceman, one of the lean, mean fighting machines. And they whisked me off to Orlando, where I did boot camp. And they didn't let me out for one night. And I got a little drunk. Didn't get in no trouble, because the next night they let me out again. And I got a little drunk. And then I went home for 2 weeks, where I proceeded to party like all get up. And they sent me to Great Lakes, where life started to change for me. As I said, I'm from Fort Louisiana. And when I got to Great Lakes, they told me it snows in Great Lakes. Anybody here know what snow is like? It freaking snows in Great Lakes. Okay? I thought, hey, that's cool. You know, the stuff will come, we play in it, it's gone away, come back again, play in it. This crap came and stayed. And some more came. And some more came. Now, I'm wearing these boots in Great Lakes in the wintertime. I switched my game up a little bit because I'm a thinker. And this is what I thought. If I switch to 151 Bacardi rum, I won't freeze to death should I pass out while I'm outside. So I switched to Bacardi 151. And I drink a lot of that stuff. And I was going to school there. I went to school on the swing shift. So when I left school at night, at midnight, I stopped by the bar and got me a few drinks and went to my bathroom and I drank some Bacardi 151. And then the next day I was out in town drinking, then I'd go to school. And somewhere in that time I'd sleep a little bit. And then something really horrible happened. I was on my way to school one day about 3 o'clock and they found me in the barracks on that little platform where the stairs go around on the staircase in a little ball. I had what they call a pancreatitis attack. And they transported me to the Naval Hospital where they detoxed me. Hence my problems with the Navy started. This white guy that I didn't like shows up in his little white uniform with all this crap all over it. His name was George. And George says, "Do you have a drinking problem, Jim?" I said, "No." He says, "If you show up here again in the detox ward, we'll do something about it." I said, "Gotcha." He let me out. 1 week later, they found me at the bottom of the same stairs in a little ball and transported me to the Naval Hospital. That was in 1979. It was not a good year. George showed up and he says, "We're going to send you up to the ARC. I didn't know what that meant. Found out soon enough, they locked me in this place called the ARC. And they treated me for alcoholism. And I see my medical record, and right on the front of it was a big red stamp that says chronic alcoholic. Jerks. You know? Two little incidents, they get all upset. So I stayed there and I played their game because that's what I knew how to do. You know, I didn't fit in, but I played their game. I wasn't an alcoholic, I was too young, but I played their game. And I went along with them and I did what they wanted me to do. You know, said I was an alcoholic, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we go to meetings and they hand out them silly little chips you seen this guy giving out. I never took one. Wasn't worth nothing anyway. They're useless, you know. And then I got out of rehab and I went back to A school. And I finished my A school with a 93% average. Not bad for a dumb guy. And I got on a bus and I went to O'Hara Airport where I got me a double shot of Bacardi 151. And I'm off to the races again. I flew to Louisiana to visit my mom. She flew to San Diego. Just like white people. Two weeks later, I flew to San Diego. She flew back to Louisiana. Now, I would like to tell you that it didn't bother me. A But when you get to be where you're such a jerk that your mother don't want to see you, you got a serious problem. I got to San Diego and I got hooked up with all the right people on the ship, those that drink. And guess what the ship did right after I got there? It deployed the Westpac. We went to 9 different countries. And I've always been proud of this fact. I only got arrested 8 times. We came back to San Diego. And we went into the shipyard in Long Beach, where things really took a different turn for me, because I got with the Navy flag team. They got this huge freaking flag that's 75 feet by 50 feet, and we marched with it at these great events like Super Bowl, President Inauguration, opening day at Dodger Stadium. I was at opening day at Dodger Stadium in 1981. I can't tell you what the scores were. I can't tell you what team they played. I don't remember being in the damn place. Okay? I was a little bit drunk, but I would still march with this freaking flag. Yeah. Of course, everybody on the team was drunk. The chief who ran the team, he was my bud. We used to hang out at the AM bar, drink some, then drink some more, then I'd go out of town and party. You know, but during that time, I was going in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first meeting I went to of Alcoholics Anonymous was April of 1975. I immediately got sober in 1982. So I spent a lot of time going in and out of this program, you know. Bad things happen along the way. I came to in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, at the National Rodeo Finals. And I called the ship and the chief says, well, what are you doing over there? I didn't know I was supposed to keep track of what I was doing. And then he said, where's the car? And I said, what car? He says, the one you rented from Long Beach. I rented a car. They found it in Vegas. Things were not going the way I wanted them to. You know, and I came back and I had this thing going in the United States Navy where I was going up and down in rank. I think Jerry retired at the top. I got promoted at least 5 times more than Gary and finished 3 under him. You know, that's the kind of guy I was. But I like to have fun. You know, I like to have fun. May 30th, 1982 was the turning point in my life. I went up a one-way, the wrong way, downtown San Diego, traveling at a high rate of speed. They thought it was a high rate of speed, 70 miles per hour, and I slammed into a car head-on. He was not happy. In fact, he was standing on the sidewalk writing a citation to the guy that he had stopped. It was a San Diego police officer squad car, and the lights attracted me to him. You know, they pulled me out of the car, and they stood me up against the wall. And this guy was explaining to me about this line in the sidewalk. And I'm thinking, man, this guy's dumb. They're holding me against the wall. And so I looked at him and I said, you're a real Dick Tracy. I can't see the sidewalk. Well, so they put me in the back of the squad car. And he took me to jail, which is where I seen me. Because all the trouble I got into was because I was black. All the trouble I got into, I never got arrested by anybody but a white police officer. Everything that went wrong in my life was because of white people, and I did not like them. They were just there to hold a brother down, and I knew it. And I'm sitting in this cell with all these drunks, and I'm watching them. And this guy, he's stumbling back and forth in the cell, and he's having a tizzy fit because they arrested him one more time for drunk driving. He had been arrested 5 times, May 30th, was his 5th time in 1982. Now, I had a little bit of whereabouts about me, and I counted them. January, February, March, April, May. That's one a month. And this thought entered my mind. Could it be because he's drunk? Obviously, it was because he was drunk. And then this other thought entered my mind that I didn't like. Maybe you're here because you're drunk. See? And the chief boiler technician came and got me out of jail. And I loved the Navy in 1982, because you know what they did? Said, you can't drive, you wrecked this car. Give me my ID card and said, have fun. Now, in 1982, I started going to meetings again in April, and I went to a meeting every day up to that point. And I went to a meeting every day for the next few days. But when I left that jail, I went out and drank, because if you had the problems I had, you would drink too. If you had to go see a white judge and you were black, you would drink too. If you had to go listen to a white DA tell a white judge what to do with you, you would drink. So that's what I did. But I kept going to meetings. I would go to meetings sometimes twice a day. The evening meetings were tough, because they were like an hour and 15 minutes in San Diego. You know, and halfway through the meeting, I'd go outside and get a drink to put up with you jerks. That's how I looked at it. And life for me wasn't good. And for some reason, I lived in Los Angeles and I was stationed in San Diego. And for some reason, on the morning of June 7th, 1982, I woke up, and my normal routine when I woke up at 3 in the morning was to get a quart of vodka and a 12-ounce tumbler, pour about this much of vodka in it, pour about that much scotch in it, top it off with a Coors Light, drink it down, go to the bathroom, puke it up, brush my teeth, take a shower, shave, get dressed, and make another one like that and get in my truck and drive to San Diego. And I get to Oceanside just in time to make that loop. I'm off the freeway in Oceanside and hit the 7-Eleven when they opened the box. It was two tall buds to San Diego. Still don't know how far it is in miles, but I know it was two tall buds. And that morning, I didn't make my cocktail. I got up, I showered, didn't brush my teeth, I got dressed, and I hopped in my truck. Then I headed to San Diego. And I look at the clock on the dashboard, and I was on time, I was on schedule. But I got to work early, and I've not taken a drink since. Don't ask me why, it just happened. Don't ask me why God picked me, it's grace. And I learned a long time ago, grace is something I do not deserve. It's because God loved me in spite of me, in spite of my behavior. So, he also gave me mercy. That's he didn't give me what I deserve. Because when I look back over my shoulder and I see where I've been and what I've done, I am glad that he did not give me what I deserve. I started going to meetings and I didn't like being there because there was a lot of white people there. I didn't like being there because I didn't like what they had to say. I just didn't like anybody in this room, and I wasn't going to like you. But I kept going to meetings. The Navy shipped me off to Norfolk, Virginia, where they put me through treatment again and brought me back to San Diego. And I got a sponsor. I like to tell you that I went up to this guy and said, will you sponsor me? But that's not what happened. This guy walked up to me and he handed me a card with his name and his phone number on it. He said, John F. has his phone number. And he says, call me every day until I tell you not to call me. And I'm like, I don't know who the hell he thinks he is. So I didn't even call him. And I went to the Wednesday night meeting and I'm sitting there. This guy walks in and he sits down next to me. In not so polite terms, he told me, when I tell somebody to call me, every day. I mean for them to call me. You do not want to not call me. So I thought, okay, then I'll call him every day. That's what he wants. I'll call him every freaking day I'm in court. So for the next 18 months, this is how it went. I didn't read the book. I didn't do any steps. But I called John every freaking day I was in court. I go out to the pier between 11:30 and midnight. I drop a quarter in the phone. I dial his number. His phone would ring. He'd wake up. I'd say, I'm calling you, asshole. And I'd hang up. He got his call. Leave me alone. You know? And that's how it was. I wasn't there to get sober because sooner or later, commanding officers, judges, and all those people would leave me alone, and I wouldn't have to go through this crap. But something happened. Because when I go to meetings, they say, put chairs out. And I say, I only sit in one. And John would say, I only want you to sit in one, but you're going to put chairs out. Clean ass phrase, because you can smoke in meetings here. And I says, I don't smoke. I don't want you to smoke. I just want you to clean the ashtrays. Then they selected me to make coffee. You know, you people just never stop. So I made coffee. I took their coffee pot. You know that thing on top? I poured about a half a can of coffee in it. Put some water in it. Plugged the damn thing in it. There's their coffee. And some old guy must have been 900 years old. Helped Bill write the big book, some crap. Gets a cup of coffee, goes sit down, he tastes it, and I'm like, you can see him chewing it, trying to swallow it. And he says, who made the coffee? And he says, Jim White. He goes, we need to get that boy to make coffee all the time. We make good coffee. First time I got a good cup of coffee. You know. During that 18 months, they made me the greeter at the Friday night meeting. I'm not going to repeat what I used to say then because I'm supposed to grow up and clean up my act, so. Okay? But people will come through the door, and I'll shake their hands and welcome them to the Imperial group. And I shake their hands and say, I don't like you, go sit the F down. The nicest thing I mustered up to say to anybody in 18 months of going to meetings was, I hope you get killed on your way home. Don't like you. Don't like your parents, your grandparents, or their damn dog and cat either. Didn't want to be here. Wasn't going to stay. But something happened while I was going to meetings, making coffee, cleaning ashtrays, setting up chairs, shaking people's hands, and insulting them. Something happened. I woke up at the end of 18 months, and I thought I was losing my mind. And I called John at 2 in the morning. I said, John, I don't know what's going on. I think I'm losing my mind. And John said, rest easy. You can't lose what you don't have. He said, but I do know what's going on. He said, get your big book and come on over. Because I was not allowed to have a 12 and 12 until I learned what was in the big book. So I went to my locker and I found this crap they gave me that looked something like this. Didn't know there was words in between them covers. And I went over to John's house with it. And we start going through it. And he started taking me through the steps. And I heard people work on the first step for months. Took John like 2 minutes to get me through the first step. You're an asshole. You can't do this by yourself. Now shut up. Second step. You must be insane. You keep coming back and you call me. End of discussion. Third step, get on your knees. It's in the book. You know? And I'm thinking, at the rate we're going, he's going to make me write a fourth step, and I don't want to do that. And he whipped on his pad, and he said, you're going to start writing. And I remember sitting at his dining room table writing out my fourth step. And I wasn't real sharp then. And I wrote on a fourth step, I do not like this asshole. And I thought, oh, he'll see that. So I drew a line through it so he can't read it. you know. And then we did the fifth step, and he went and got us lunch. And he told me, he says, while I'm going to get lunch, I want you to sit here, because it'll be a while before I get back. He says, I want you to sit here, and I want you to think, meditate, and see if there's anything you left out of your four steps that you need to put into it. And I wasn't going to tell him. Come hell or high water, I was not going to tell him. And he came back, and he said, did you leave anything out? I said, no. He said, so why are you going to keep it to yourself? I said, keep what? He said, I know me when I see me. And when I looked at his eyes, I knew he knew that as a child, I had been molested. And I wasn't going to tell him. Jim. He also told me that it wasn't you, Jim. It wasn't your fault. And you need to let it go. See, I used to sit around and think of ways to harm the individual that did that to me, my older brother. I had a rifle with a scope on it, and I knew where I would stand, how far away, I knew how fast the bullet traveled, and I knew what a hollow point would do to him when it hit him. See, but once you do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, John told me that day before I started him, he says, your life will change. You will have what we call a spiritual experience. And people will treat you differently. They will look at you differently. And I thought he had lost his freaking mind. I read those 12 steps. They can't be that powerful. But we did the steps. And we go to the Saturday night meeting. And this guy, Marvin, was the greeter. Starving Marvin was the greeter. He was tall, skinny. And the very first time I seen that man, he put his arms out and he said, God is love, love is God. And I told him what to do with his God and what to do with his love, because I wasn't that kind of guy. And if he ever tried to hug me again, I'd cut him. You know? That's why I haven't heard about Obama yet. And after we did the 12th step, after he took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that Saturday afternoon we went to the Fairmont group, and Marvin stood out in the doorway. After that first meeting with me, I went there every Saturday. I was in port, and he'd see me coming, and he'd go get a cup of coffee, go get some cookies, go say hello to somebody, but he was not talking to me. You know, I don't know why, but he had enough of me after that first meet. But that day, I walked up this walkway, and he stood in the doorway, and he opened his arms, and he repeated those same words, God is love, love is God. And that's the very first time I hugged a man in my life. You know, now you can't get my ass to quit hugging people. I hugged a wino on the street. You know. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, my life has changed. You know, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to go through one of the worst points of my life. I went through a 5-year divorce. I lost $250,000 in assets. It was well worth it. Okay. 4 years ago, I got married to this beautiful short woman. And every morning I wake up, I look at her and I wonder, what the hell is she doing with me? I know me. You know, but she treats me like she loves me. She speaks to me like she loves me. You know, she actually shows that she loves me. Don't know why. You know, but I've learned some things along the way. You know, one of the things I've learned is that if you're here tonight and you're not quite sure what you're doing, stick around. This too shall come to pass. Life will get better. There is life after Bud, even after Bacardi 151. You know. In 1984, I heard Jesse Jackson speaking to the Democratic Convention. And in his speech to the young Americans, where he said, our time has come. He says, we went from disgrace to amazing grace. And I understand that. As a young child, I stood with my father and watched the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King speak about going to the top of the mountain and looking over the Jordan. I've been in the Jordan. I've been to the promised land. I've walked in the promised land. I've been treated with love, kindness. And it's because of the people in these rooms and a God that loved me in spite of me. November 13, 2005, I was licensed as a minister. Moi? And they said, it's okay for you to talk to our congregations. Moi? Go figure. It's been a long, hard road. But if I had to travel it again, I wouldn't change one thing. My first sponsor told me, he says, I don't know what you're going to be doing in 20 years, but if you clean house, trust in God, and don't drink, you will like what you're doing. You will have a good time doing it. So, I told you I went through a divorce. I had a wife and two kids and a dog. Didn't like the damn dog. So I'm glad they took him. Today I got a wife and five kids. And the kids call us quattro because our fourth grandkid's going to be born next month. Now, if you got a little one around me now that I'm a grandpa, keep them away because I'm real good at spoiling them. I wind them up on sugar and send them back to their damn house. I don't know what I can say that I can make you understand that these 12 steps is life-changing, life-giving. You will never experience anything better in your lifetime than doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, than coming to these rooms. See, now, I don't know about anybody else, but I cannot put people in groups and hate them. Whether they're black, white, purple, or polka dot. I can't hate them for their lifestyle, where they live, where they're from, their color, their preference in sex. That's none of my damn business. The business God gave me is to carry the message that Alcoholics Anonymous saved lives. And that's the only one I have for you. Alcoholics Anonymous saved lives. It gave me the only chance I had. I hear people say, you gave me a second chance. I had no chance without it. I'm not here because I want to be. I'm here because I have no choice in the matter. I'm here because if I'm not here, you'll hear about what happens to people who don't come here. I don't want to be one of them. So when Bill called me and he said, would you like to speak? You damn skippy, I would. I called my pastor and told him, won't be at Bible study tonight. He said, why? I said, been tapped for 12 step meeting. He goes, let's pray. Have fun. Do what you're supposed to be doing. So he says, we'll get you next week to teach. And I'm like, man, it's a winning situation all the way around. You know, if nobody told you that they love you today, I love you. I care about you. And there ain't a damn thing you can do about it. Thank you.